Now, the first is organization. And this follows what we were talking about yesterday about how do we get time for our priorities. These things are discussed in any management magazine, but the area we want to talk about is known by the experts as the span of control. We have found out in our office that when a secretary gets overworked, the best way to complicate the problem is to assign another secretary. Now, you know why? Because the first secretary immediately, 50% of her time is taking up supervising the other secretary. Keeping her on the job. So you lose half the effectiveness right away. So when the secretary gets overloaded, we call in help from a secretarial pool so that this first secretary can do her job and a minimum of supervision. Now, we want to take a little diagram here to show the complexities of human relationships when we work together. Let's suppose that A supervises B and C. How many relationships exist between these three people? Well, you can get five for sure, and almost six, I think. Now, A deals with B alone. This is one relationship. They can carry on business this way. A can deal with C alone. Then A works with B and C jointly. Then B and C, or B and C, operate. There's a relationship between them apart from A being present. Then sometimes A will work with both B and C. Where B, A and B, take the initiative in a project involving C, or A and C are in a joint relationship involving B, where they take the initiative and carry it in. Now, these last two, they're a little weak in summary, but there's at least four distinguishable, and then two kind of hazy relationships. Now, if you add a person, what do you think the cross relationships go up to? And you can figure them out. You add go to 44 cross relationships in here. And you add F. So it's mighty easy when a group relationship gets complicated to spend all your time just housekeeping and not concentrate on the mission. Now you can get mighty busy with just a few people. I figured out once when I was in the military that you could take a unit of 35 people, put them out on an island. You've got a commanding officer, etc.
executive officer and department heads. You've got the cooks and the security police and the people that clean up the quarters and athletics, recreation, and so forth. You can take a group of 35 and occupy them 100% of their time just taking care of one another. And they have no mission at all except mutual support. So, as human relationships increase, things get more complex. And it's mighty hard to get anything done, because you're spending all your time just keeping everybody happy and satisfied. Follow me, what I'm talking about here? If you're responsible for 7 people, and you get involved in every detail of their lives, not with their families, but just with the other 6, apart from any problems they have with other people, you've got 500 different relationships. Now, just keeping that in mind, we'll see why that a study of this type needs to be made. Now, I'll talk about another subject here. Did any of you join this organization for the eliminating of a digital system of telephone dialing? Remember the organization that was formed? Our number here used to be Melrose 4. Now, there's certain laws that I know that many of you have studied. It's easy to memorize this number right here. But when you go into I don't know how many more employees the telephone company is going to put on, but I think if I owned any AT&T stock, I'd sell it, because I predict the dividends are going to go down. The human brain is capable of memorizing 5 unassociated numbers or matters of any kind without effort. But the human brain has reached its capacity when it gets to 5. This is the reason that a pronounceable prefix was invented in the first place. That your prefix is different from the numbers. So you can memorize groups. But when you put down that many digits, anybody that's memorized their numbers still has to go back and translate. Now let's see, that ME, that stands for 6-3. Then when you get it translated, then you can go ahead. So this is not a matter of IQ. It's a matter of the human brain's limitation. Now, the telephone company had a problem, and that is that they ran out of pronounceable prefixes. So they had to do something, and what they did was the only thing they knew to do. Now, I think they probably copied from the European system, which never uses prefixes. But in most cases, they don't have near as many telephones, and they only have about 5 numbers in most of them. So they don't have the problem. Now, this concept of the limitation of the human brain is what has led to this terminology. And I want to read from an article on this subject. The average human brain finds its effective scope in handling from 3 to 6 other branches. If a man divides the whole of his work into 2 branches and delegates his responsibility freely and properly to 2 experienced heads of branches, he will not have enough to do. The occasions when they would refer to him would be too few to keep him fully occupied. If he delegates to 3 heads, he will be kept fairly busy, while 6 heads of branches will give most bosses a 10-hour day. These data are the results of centuries of experience. Then the summary of this, organizations are run by rule, then. A rule whereby from 3 to 6 hands are shepherded by 1 head, each head in turn being member of a superior group of from 3 to 6 who are being wheeled into line 1 by 1. The illustrations given here is a military illustration, and it points out that an NCO in charge of 3 private soldiers would be too idle, while a lieutenant general in charge of 6 divisions would be too busy. So whether he's a general or whether he's a corporal, he cannot supervise more than 5 or 6 separate functions. Where you have any kind of an organization where there is an unrealistic span of control, you find inefficiency and low morale. And whether it's your organization that you're working for or you're involved in one, when there's inefficiency, low morale in production, this is the place to look. And 99% of the time, this is where the trouble is. Now, if A has too many people working for him, 2 things will happen. The first is that these people can't get to him. All these people can't get to him. So they will wait in critical areas of action until they can. So your organization stands still. On the other hand, the other thing that will happen is that these people will make decisions on their own. But because they do not have the information that only he has, it's an erroneous decision. So this factor will always cause poor organization and then or poor production and low morale. On the other hand, if there are too few, as was brought out, then this man isn't busy enough. So he over-supervises. And these people can't exercise any initiative. He just breathes down their neck all the time. And it's a poor situation. If you want to get the humorous side of this, read Parkinson's Law, written by an Englishman. I loaned my book out and I didn't have it to bring this morning, but he gives the humorous side of what happens here. Well, how does this relate to you? Whether you are the man up here or one of these down here, the secret of your having the time to accomplish the priorities we talked about yesterday is in getting organized. Now, Bill, you've grown up, you know. What do you do if you're so busy? You can never get to your priorities. Well, I don't know what's taking your time. I don't know whether you're looking out at too many people down here, but I wouldn't miss your time. But well, you've got too many people taking your time. So, you've got to divide them up. You've got to pick 5 or 6 out of all the people. responsible for and put them in charge and make them responsible for the others. Now, there is an exception to this, and that exception is that where every one of these people are doing an identical task, such as a sales manager that has a bunch of salesmen, then you can greatly increase the span of control. But where their functions are different, don't try to be a hero. Don't try to be a genius. That God didn't make your brain with the ability to cross that barrier of about 5 or 6. Now, I've heard that you can teach a crow to count to 3. But when you try to get him to 4, he just doesn't work. He doesn't have the capacity. God didn't make the human brain with the capacity to retain and work at more than 4 or 5 different things at once. And you can't supervise effectively people that are engaged in 4 or 5 different things. It's amazing to me how commonly this is practiced in business, but how little is known in Christian work. I recall one week after we had a pastor's conference here, I had dinner at the pastor. And he talked about how good it was to get out here for a week. And he could hardly face getting back again. So I asked him about that. Well, I said, what do you do? Well, you know what he did. Like most pastors, he ran everything in the church. If a Sunday school teacher was going to be absent, she called him up. And no matter what part it was, they called him up. So he was putting in 12 to 20-hour days. So we sat down and we discussed this thing. And I just tried to point out to him where his problem was. You know, I saw him a year later. He said it was the greatest year of his life. He got back and he put the Sunday school superintendent in charge of the Sunday school. And he refused to... Now, of course, he gave him the authority that went with the responsibility. And any teacher that had a problem, go to the superintendent. And he did that with the whole thing. And he had time to do what he was supposed to do since he'd been a pastor there. And he said it's really a great year. And he wasn't about to get caught in that trap again where that he did all those things. Well, can you see any application of this in your situation? How many people can you meet with in depth? Not very many, can you? You can't take on a dozen. Well, actually, what the experts do in here, see, in this principle, they vacillate between 3 and 6 and think that 6 is the maximum. And it depends on the complexity of the task. But it becomes sort of mechanical after this. Yes.
Is that advisable for we as mothers? Would you consider your children as 1, 2, 3, and 4 and then
having 2 extra? Yes, I sure would. In fact, I kind of have a little prejudice along this line. And that is that parental responsibility extends first to your children and then to someone else's. And no matter who you meet with, it's somebody's child. That's my feeling. So your own children have priority over somebody else. Dean?
What, does Maria
take
4 and you take 3? Beg your pardon? Maria take 4 and you take 3?
We have many cross relationships. we could use a full-time chauffeur just taking them and delivering them. When there's too few, you don't develop any leadership. You see, these people, their morale goes down because they don't have anything to do. They're supervised. They're told everything to do. Their talents are wasted. Their morale goes down. This guy isn't busy enough. So this is the main thing, morale. Whenever morale is low, why production is low. And, of course, when you consider it in an industrial basis, and when I think of industry, about every other year I'm responsible for Glen Eyrie, then I give it away, then it comes back to me, and it keeps gravitating in a circle. But we can kind of trace a pattern. Low morale, low production, accidents, that's when they start in here. Then you have murmuring, rebellion, so forth. It goes right down the line. Long as morale's up, no problems down below. Not even accidents. Most accidents are the result of low morale. There are many of them. Where that what we said here was that and this is in a Christian organization too, that there's low morale, low production. What caused it? Start to look for the cause. The cause is generally that the top person is trying to supervise too many people. Now, here's what happens. These people can't get to him but about every 2 or 3 weeks. So they do nothing. When a problem comes up and needs a solution, they say, well, I've got to wait till I see the ball. So he just sits still. This is one thing that happens. The other thing that happens is they will go ahead and make decisions on their own, which are erroneous decisions, because that they do not have the information that this man has. And we've already talked about the judgment. It depends a great deal on information. Now, if he's not in touch with them, he doesn't know what they're doing either. That's right.
How about a person who's a pioneer in the work? For instance, Charles Johnson.
I mentioned before this a management conference that was held out here about a month ago. Actually, we didn't have anything to do with it except we were the hosts of it. This is by a foundation in Chicago, conducted by a foundation that has devoted their money for improvement of Christian management. So they had the heads of about 15 or 20 organizations out there to help them, give them free help. And one of the things that they brought out was that the pioneer, the originator, the founder, the man with the great drive and imagination, is invariably a poor manager. And of course, it just happens with the organizations that we had present. The ones that were still in their first phase with their founder were the ones who had the greatest management problems. The ones that were in their second phase, generally it seems that God does in raising up the successor to the original founder is to bring in a man then that is able to consolidate and hold what the founder started out, because he is generally a man that has greater management ability. And I didn't realize until they brought it out in this conference that this is a universal pattern practically in organizations of this sort. So God uses one kind of a man to get it started, then he uses another kind of a man to expand it. Now, I wouldn't want to say that pass judgment on Dawson Trotman, but as far as the Navigators are concerned, he has been gone for 9 years. God used him to do what he wanted to do. the organization has probably multiplied 5 to 10 times since he's gone. So God used him to get it going. Now, whether it would have grown like that under his leadership, I don't know. I just know that it has. What we're saying is that he was not essential to the perpetuation of what God used him to start.
That's the change from the assistant being coordinator to being director.
Well, I'm not sure I follow it. Well, in management terminology, that coordinator is a bad word.
Well, the responsibility actually changed.
Yes. Well, it had to. Because, here you got this. So what you've got to do, whether it's you or Warren Stanley, is to take your best men and put them in charge of this. Now, I think you slipped in one or two cases here, but then that's the theory anyway.
I was wondering how there's a time related to this management going on. Wouldn't this be figured on something like an 8-hour day where this man has most of that time to supervise these others? And what about a situation where students are in school and involved in classes quite a bit of the day? Would this cut down the number of men that could effectively work with?
Well, I think a teaching situation is different because you're doing the same thing with practically all of them, with the exception of a few problems.
Well, I meant as far as a student working with another.
Oh. Now, I'm not sure I follow the question, but if I do, you are limited to the number of people you can work with in depth. And the only way you can expand your ministry is to get one man real quick so he can take charge of some of the others. And this is a rule we use in the Navigators. Who do you invest your time with? The one who can help you with the others as soon as. Because there's so many that have needs.
But would he be able to take maybe one or two more individuals if he had more time?
Now, I think where your limitation would be, with 5 or 6 people, you don't need a notebook to know where you stand with them. You can remember what you talked about and prayed about, maybe you have some notes just for reference. But you can really carry them in your heart and mind. But if you get more than that, then you're going to have a notebook. You can't even remember what you prayed about, what you talked about. And you probably can't even do that with 6. So I think that there's a factor here that is probably more important than time, its capacity. And so this has nothing to do with IQ, because we're talking here about the corporal and the general. Both got the same problem. Their brain, it does not equip them to engage in too many separate and unrelated functions.
No, I think is that you have the responsibility back to each one. Now, what is the responsibility of A? Do you go over it?
A is, this is his life. These people right there. Now, tomorrow, perhaps, we'll talk about morale and how that he keeps them at their top peak of efficiency. But this is his life, is these people. So whatever they need, by way of time, attention, supervision, he's got to give them. If he can't do this, then he will revert back to a one-person type. Remember what we said in the beginning? Leadership is accomplishing your objectives through the efforts of others. And you can have a lot wider range of objectives if you have others to help you accomplish. But if you can't meet their needs, then you revert back. And again, you're limited to what you can do through your efforts. Would be my impression. Maybe somebody else wants to comment on that.
Well,
I just use these relationships to prove the complexity of it. And I feel this is the limitation that God has placed upon us in creation, just like the telephone numbers. You know, that you could memorize a bunch of numbers, probably. But you automatically, when you used to have the prefix in the number, knew a dozen numbers. But if your experience is what I think it is, you don't know very many telephone numbers. Remember, you've got to look them up or call information. Yeah. Well, I think that we are liberalizing our terminology as far as the navigator is concerned. And I've had some thoughts on this for quite a while. You know, we've got the IQ, and then I think there's a memory portion. And most of us come to the place that when we reach that saturation limit and we acquire a new verse, we push another now. So what we do is have a range passing through here that you can reach a saturation, I think, on this. Now, some people's saturation point comes earlier than others. Some never reach their saturation point. But I think there is a relationship. Well, I feel that the way to approach this is that you've got a certain group here that you meet with in depth. Then they can help you with the others. Now, you can have many casual contacts, backstroke, as you say, many times to make a one-time contribution. But, just theoretically, what stature are these people going to reach? If that's all they have is your backstroke ministry, wouldn't you be better to concentrate on a couple and then divide these up between them in the long run, like theoretically? Friend? Yes, I think that probably Paul would be a better example than Christ, because he worked with several groups over a long period. And he always had a few people on the string, but it wasn't too many, and not for too long. He had a different group. So I would hesitate to think that we could follow Christ's example, either to limit or to encourage us. Well, shall we leave this subject? So this is not only the most unspiritual part of leadership conference, but I'm afraid it's the most impractical. But I just felt, because you didn't turn any subject study, that we ought to get these things in mind so you can realize what's happening when you're too busy. And if you're too busy to accomplish your top priorities, the answer is to get organized. Now, if you happen to belong to an organized group, I'd get out of it. I wouldn't be the victim. I don't want to be one of these people down here. That there's no satisfaction in me if I can't do a job or I can't get to the boss. At the end, all my time is spent in frustration. Get out of it. Anything else before we go on to another subject that's completely different?
Could you briefly explain why the term coordinator is in the
main reason that coordinator, I think, is not a good term, is because that this is a position without authority. Now, if this man who's a coordinator derives authority from his boss, then he's a deputy or something like this. He isn't a coordinator. So the man in charge of other people needs to be able to exercise some control over them. Any book you ever pick up on management has got at least one chapter, organization or management, on that. This happens to be from the Harvard Business Review, which comes out every 2 months. And actually, this book right here can't be purchased. You have to subscribe, or I did, but subscribe to Harvard Business Review for a year to get the book. But reprints are available on this particular subject. And I think I've got one of them here. This is a reprint from a Harvard Business Review and can be bought. Now, it deals with a lot of other things, too. But this is a key thing in it. Beg your pardon? Yeah, here in business office, and if you want to look at this later, I don't know whether they're addressed in here or not. But I, every time I get a bunch of these reprints, I get down to my one copy, get them all the way, and that's the only one I have.
I'm working with several people, say you have four. A lot of, of course, ideally, you'd like to think that the time you spend with them, the responsibility to them and then to you would be balanced. But many times it seems to, possibly because of this, the responsibilities are different, or maybe their own initiative is different. You get a lot of balance.
Yes, now I think there's a difference here between a spiritual responsibility and an organizational responsibility. Spiritually, we put in a lot of time on somebody that might not pay off. But organizationally, you can't afford to do it. If he can't help you, then get rid of him. Get somebody that can help you. Spiritually, it's a different thing. I think you can see the different relationships here. Okay, let's shift to another subject. Can anybody think of any possible application of this? I think the first 100 verses that anybody memorizes will meet 90% of the situations they will face the rest of their life. The first 100 verses will equip you for 90% of all the situations you'll face the rest of your life, both in spiritual problems and in evangelism. So the first 100 are by far the most. Now, let's shift gears. Anybody have any ideas what you want to talk about tomorrow? This is a great, this next thing we're going to talk about is a great comfort to me. And this is called the art of listening as a part of communication. I think it helps for any person that talks or listens to be aware of the problem that we face. Now, statistically, as this magazine gives us here, 2 months after listening to a talk, the average listener will remember only about 25% of what was said. In fact, after we have barely learned something, we tend to forget from one half to one third within 8 hours. It is startling to realize that frequently we forget more in the first short interval than we do in the next 6 months. Now, why is this? This is what I'm interested in. If we know why it is, maybe it can help. So you see, I'm aware that I've been, this has been an enjoyable time. These 4 hours, but I've got a pretty good idea. Okay. I'm under no disillusion at all. I should say I am disillusioned, I guess. I really got hardened to this during the war. When I, latter part of the war, I was an instructor. And the subject I was teaching people, their lives depended on learning. And I got used to, after a while, standing up for 7 hours, 6 hours, telling them to induce four, then I gave a quiz of seven, to find at least a third of them thought that two and two was five. You know, that wasn't what we taught, but, well, here's the problem. Let me read it to you. Basically, the problem is caused by the fact that we think much faster than we talk. The average rate of speech for most Americans is around 125 words per minute. This rate is slow going for the human brain, which is made up of more than 13 billion cells and operates in such a complicated but efficient manner that it makes the greatest modern digital computer seem to be slow-witted. And you've probably heard these people tell about that if a computer was built that was capable of duplicating what the human brain does, that would take a three-story building with so much floor space, I don't know. But they've talked about just in space, what it would occupy. People who study the brain are not in complete agreement on how it functions when we think, but most psychologists believe that the basic medium of thought is language. Now, this is a very important statement. Putting it a different way, thoughts are related to words, related to vocabulary. Certainly, words play a large part in our thinking process, and the words race through our brains at speeds much higher than 125 words per minute. And the most conservative estimate, although this author wouldn't stick out his neck on it, that I've read, is that your brain operates, even when it's in low gear, at 10 times this speed. So for every word that I speak, your brain entertains 9 others. And I speak a little slower than average, so it's a little bit more than that. While I've said one word, your brain has duplicated that at least 10 times, and maybe more. So, you're not with me. If we'd record your thoughts, some of you have been thinking about the next hour, the last hour, when you get back, trip home, and so forth. While I'm trying to get you to concentrate on one thought, there's 9 areas of competition that are coming in and fairly successful, and in many cases, completely take over. And my word doesn't even get in. It might seem logical to slow down our thinking when we listen so as to coincide with the 125 word per minute speech rate, but slowing down the thought process seems to be a very difficult thing to do. When we listen, therefore, we continue thinking at high speed while the spoken words arrive at low speed. In the act of listening, the differential between thinking and speaking rates means that our brain works with hundreds of words in addition to those that we hear, assembling thoughts other than those spoken to us. To phrase it another way, we can listen and still have spare time for thinking. Now, it's a real master of a platform that can command 100% of your attention for even a few seconds. Isn't it? Now, a child's, that we know something about a child's span of attention. And it's less than a minute. You know, you've got to shift about every minute. Even you've got to keep them in the room with you. Now, the purpose of this article is to tell you how to be a better listener. And we won't discuss it, but I'll just give you some of the hints here. Again, this is a very impractical subject, isn't it? Okay, here's three or four hints on how to listen. The listener thinks ahead of the talker, trying to anticipate what the oral discourse is leading to and what conclusions will be drawn from the words spoken at the moment. That's number one. Think ahead of him. And while you're thinking ahead, what's he going to do next? And by the way, what application is he going to make? What's he trying to prove? Second thing, the listener weighs the evidence used by the talker to support the points that he makes. Is this evidence valid? The listener asks himself, is it complete? Question everything he says. Is the evidence valid? Is it complete? Now he's trying to prove something. Is he doing a good job? Periodically, this is number three, the listener reviews and mentally summarizes the points of the talk completed thus far. Go right back. And the fourth thing, throughout the talk, the listener listens between the lines in search of meaning that is not necessarily put into spoken words. He pays attention to the nonverbal communication, facial expressions, gestures, tone of voice, to see if it adds a meaning to the spoken words. He asks himself, is the talker purposely skirting some area of the subject? Why is he doing it? The speed at which we think, compared to that at which people talk, allows plenty of time to accomplish these four mental tasks when we listen. However, they do require practice before they can become a part of mental agility that makes for good listening. In our training courses, we have devised exercises designed to give people this practice and their build up good habits of concentration. Yes. We've got a very courageous person in the room. What was the question? B. Okay. The listener weighs the evidence used by the talker to support the points that he makes. Is this evidence valid? The listener asks himself, is the evidence complete? I think what you're saying is he proving his point as they go along? What evidence do you leave out? What evidence can I think of that backs up? Or what evidence can I think against him? So you argue with him, debate with him. Right there. You want to go over those four again?
Yeah.
Okay. Now, I think it'd be hard to copy these verbatim. You'll do well just to summarize. The first one is, think ahead of what he's saying to try to figure out where he's going and what conclusions he's going to arrive at. Think ahead. Try to picture the end of his story. And the second is where that you argue with him, debate with him, challenge his evidence. The third is that you review and summarize everything that's gone on before. And the fourth is where that you pick up nonverbal information from the tone of voice, gestures, and all these things. Now, let me give the illustration that this article uses. The newspapers reported not too long ago that a church was torn down in Europe and shipped stone by stone to America, where it was reassembled in its original form. The moving of the church is analogous to what happens when a person speaks and is understood by a listener. The talker has a thought, to transmit his thought, he takes it apart by putting it into words. The words sent through the air to the listener must then be mentally reassembled into the original thought as it, if they are to be thoroughly understood. But most people do not know what to listen for, and so cannot reconstruct the thought. But that's really something, when that the speaker can convey his thought so that it arrives, is received, and the same thing is constructed, same thought, rebuilt. Well, there's some other things on this, but these are the seed thoughts.
I'm not actually taking a few notes while a person is speaking on a personal basis, not in a class like this, but might this be distracting to the person you're talking to?
I think this is a controversial subject, but I remember one professor that I heard speak once. He said in his observation in the classroom that what happened most of the time was that the notes went from the teacher's notebook into the student's notebook without going through the brains of either. I think that it is very helpful to take notes. But if you try to get everything the speaker says, then you don't think. And you don't absorb, and you always intend to get back and make some use of that. But most people never do. So I think it's better to listen and get one thought and apply it than to take a whole book full of notes and then nothing happens. Okay, any other comment or question on this? So what are the two areas we dealt with this morning?
Actually, these are the basic ideas you use for reading or information.
Yes. Because certainly our minds can think far faster than we can read. The same principle operates, doesn't it? What are the two things we talked about?
Organization.
Organization, and we just dealt with one little area of it, which is the span of control principle. And the other?
Art of listening.
Well, anybody going to give me any help for tomorrow? I thought we would try to talk about this. You can't find very many books on this subject. But maybe we could have a problem-solving session in which we could help one another in this matter of motivation.